Hello, welcome back to episode 5 of Taboo. Today's theme is demolition. I'm Katrina Heinley. I'm joined with Ellie Corman from Tab and Will Sarhangian from First Demolition Services. Same format as last time. We'll be asking the top 5 questions you guys have been asking on demolition. And I think we'll start with a little introduction. What do you do? Give us a little bit of First Demolition.
Okay, so I am the MD of First Demolition, which has become part of our broader group of companies. And we are a demolition contracting business that operate in London, the South East mostly, but also across the country where needs be. And the services that we offer to the market are demolition, strip out, cut and carve in commercial and residential, whatever properties demand it.
Perfect. And we'll be going through and deeper diving into what those all mean. Starting with question one, what does demolition mean? So we've touched on the types of demolition. I think we've actually got some pictures to accompany types of demolition. Will, if you want to talk us through what we've got.
So here we've got a row of garages on a listed property in Kensington. This is a now you see it, now you don't. So I think if you go to the next picture, hey, presto,
gone.
They're all gone. That's a pretty small job. Probably took us like 9 or 10 days with a single excavator and about 2 guys. But yeah, now you see it, now you're gone. That's another cleared site that had various small shops on it, actually, on both sides. So that was a bit more work, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. This is a demolition by hand in progress on Old Street roundabout. You can see us removing all the slab and then the steels would be progressively gone. And if you skip to the next photo, that's the same job further progressed. And then the next photo, that's the same job with almost all of the roof already gone.
Wow. And what do you do with all the rubble?
So on this job, on the right-hand side, you can see that there's a scaffold built and there's a hoist that would lower it down to first floor level. And then we would have a large skip turn up and be loaded off the gantry under a big enclosure to trap the dust. So it would take an hour and a half or something to load 15 tons of material.
Is that the thing to keep the dust? Is that the netting that gets put around scaffolding?
Similar. It's called Monoflex. So it's the same as what you see in that photo behind the scaffolding. Yeah, it's the thicker gauge material. Netting alone isn't very good for dust because it has holes in it.
There we go. That was demolition.
So this is a office floor plate that I'm sure many viewers will recognise as far as their day jobs might go. This is prior to a strip out. And then after, you can see the central floor there is completely empty.
Oh, wow.
Right, so that's us working in an occupied building. That floor is about 1,500 square metres, all done at night because of the sensitive environment. And was probably undertaken in about 9 or 10 days.
And you'll do little bits at a time?
Yeah, or as much as we can. This is another, you know, this is a large floor plate and you can see it's very heavily partitioned and you can't see very far. So if you skip to the next photo, that's it with all of the high-level mechanical services completely removed. You've got a clean concrete soffit. That floor alone is about 25,000 square feet. And that's another photo of the same place.
What are the costs to demolition and how does it vary between the different types of demolition you undertake at First Demolition Services?
So the costs fall into a series of categories. One is obviously labour, skilled and unskilled. Another one would be waste costs, so your skips for rubble or rubbish. Another one would be plant machinery. Another one would be small tools and consumables like PPE to keep people safe or netting like we just discussed. A fifth would be external contractors. And a sixth would be management. So they're the six. They're not all applicable on all jobs. I'd say all jobs require at least 4 of those. They all require management, they all require labour, they all require waste, and they all require some kind of tools. Not all jobs require heavy plant, so they'd be omitted from, say, a strip out where it's not relevant. And then the costs are based on quantities, time, and motion, basically. So, you know, a larger building is going to cost more because it's going to take more time or more resource. A more complex scheme might require more external contractors like scaffolders, like we discussed. So that alone could add 10 grand, it could add £100,000 to the cost of the demolition. And every single building is appraised on its contents, essentially. And we'll measure that out and put our methodology forward and derive from that what the costs to do it are.
And does waste management play a big role in that? Because obviously, as you said, what comes out of the building, and if you've got something like asbestos or something else involved, the cost of the removal of that specific type of waste mm-hmm. can be more costly. So how do you
100%.
Deal with the different elements of waste removal that we have to be concerned about when looking after the environment?
So, I mean, you touched on a great thing there, asbestos. We'd put that in the specialist subcontractor camp, so that would fall into that area. But then the waste itself, you look at, you've got mixed rubbish, plasterboard, concrete, hardcore, bricks, metal, which we'd get money back for. And the intention is always to segregate those waste streams as best as possible, because the most expensive is just mixed rubbish, and the cheapest is hardcore, so concrete and bricks. You wouldn't want to mix those two together, because if you pay on weight, if you've got hardcore, which is very heavy, in your mixed rubbish load, it's going to cost you a fortune. Whereas if you segregated it, it would be cheap. And it's also much more environmentally friendly, because it then allows the right material to go to its right place to be reused and repurposed without it going to landfill.
It's which like is an pick important, and mix. You've 100%. Never put the heavy stuff in.
Exactly. Exactly.
Definitely.
You got to be careful.
And then your final pictures were on cut and carve, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and can you just describe what the kind of...
Cut and carve is structural reconfiguration of a building for a new use. So what you can see in this picture is we've made a series of cutouts through a concrete slab. This is to create space for a new lift in a hotel. So you can see that, I think you can see through three penetrations. The third penetration is in progress with a diamond track saw. And then that would be cleared. And then at a later date, someone would put a new lift in. So you do a similar thing for staircases. So if you look at the next photo, that's opening through a building for a new staircase. So a feature staircase coming from a reception, coming through a series of floors. And you can see at the very top, although it's dark, we've put new steel beams in to support the floor slab with its new configuration. So there's quite a lot of complexity to cut and carve sometimes.
I presume with that complexity comes lots of discussions with mechanical, or in this scenario, engineers.
Yes.
Tell us about the relationships you have with an engineer, and specifically when cutting holes in existing floor plates, they can be very protective about the weight transfer between different sides of the building.
Yeah, definitely. So in many circumstances, the engineering design will not be our responsibility, but increasingly so, there's an appetite to put as much design responsibility with subcontractors as possible. So in the last year, I think we've taken the design responsibility on a few particular projects, including some of the ones you've just seen. And what we would do is we would take the client's engineer's design intent drawings, and then we'd figure out the exact requirements of the scheme. We'd enlist our own engineer to come to site, appraise the loads, do their calculations, and then specify either a temporary work scheme, which would temporarily take the load before something else goes in, or a permanent work scheme, like the steels there, where we'd put in that would form a permanent feature of the work. That design work then needs to be reviewed by the client's engineer, and we get into a bit of a back and forth, and eventually we find a solution that everyone's happy with and can warrant in the handover of the building.
Is that something that happens generally before you've won the contract, or
no,
after you've won the contract?
After, or exclusively after, because people are reticent to spend money on something where they can't guarantee themselves any recovery on it. And engineers essentially probably wouldn't take the work, because they're so far down the food chain as far as the procurement cycle goes that there'd be some unwillingness, I think.
So if we kind of roll off the back of that into question two, and what are the steps for demolition? So presumably the very first step might actually be getting the contract, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is it at that point you bring in other contractors, or, you know, let's start from the top. What are the steps?
Again, it falls back to the appraisal of that particular building and how we're going to go about it. Is it going to be mechanical demolition from the floor? Is it going to be scaffolded and top down? Is it going to be done by hand? So each one of those broad brush methodologies will warrant a different first step. Very simply, you're going to start from the top of the building, because otherwise you're going to end up in some kind of trouble. and you know, you might want to get a certain kind of material out first so that you can clear that, and then you end up in a situation where you might only have bricks and hardcore, and then you'd start breaking it instead of, you know, cutting it and pulling it apart, all the rubbish that might be in the roof material or whatever. And then, yeah, you'll get down to the ground and you might have to do some excavation of the foundations, clear site, make it level, make it safe, check for any obstructions or, dare we say, unexploded ordnance.
Have you ever come across any of those?
No, but we have had to do surveys, yeah, UXO surveys, and archaeological digs as well.
Wow.
With architects in attendance. I can't report much that we found, but it's still part of a client's due diligence and duty of care. And we have to obviously respect that in our processes.
Absolutely. And English heritage play a big part of that. And I've been involved in a site myself where we dug down to effectively some ground that was put there during Oliver Cromwell's days.
So oh, yeah.
These are very important things to consider.
Yeah, we've worked in all sorts of listed properties. Recently, we completed a job in Henley that was next to a church that was built in the 13th century. So, you know, obviously that wasn't a hard demolition. It was strip out, but...
Did you find any treasure?
No, but our operatives who had the pleasure of actually staying on site, because it was a hotel with a separate wing and it's obviously out of town, were convinced after reading the paper that there was actually a ghost, a female ghost that walked the halls of the hotel. And they were all asking to leave. But eventually we convinced them that wasn't the case.
And, you know, kind of we've done the steps of demolishing a building. I was going to ask, what's the most complicated kind of job have you done? Or
I think to narrow it down to one would be impossible. I think the job that encapsulates all of our capabilities the best would be the project we did called Kingsway Hall Hotel, which was a strip out of about 120,000 square feet of a 3 or 4 star hotel. I think there were 200 bedrooms, 10 suites, 3 restaurants, back of house, front of house. Everything. So that was all back to shell, and then we did various cut and carve elements on that for new skylights, for new lifts, for we demolished some staircases to open up the space, and then we actually got into some building as well, where we laid new slabs where previous holes had been made and we infilled them, and then we provided some logistic support to the contractor and themselves. So that project encapsulates all of our capabilities in one. And it was over the course of about 2 years. So, you know, that was pretty significant. On other jobs, you'd find a microcosm of something that's very, very complicated, but it doesn't make the whole job complicated, so probably not worth discussing it.
Oh, no, give us an example of a small area of real complication that you
discovered. So earlier this year, we're working on a job above Holborn Station, and we had to demolish internal chimneys. And the client's engineer determined that one of the chimneys couldn't be taken out from the roof level because there wasn't enough. The slab was so weak around it that it wouldn't. The little breast on top couldn't possibly sit. So we had to figure out a way to demolish it from the 5th floor downwards, thereby supporting the 5th to 6th, 6th to 7th, and roof all in one. And the only way you could get the permanent works to work had to be directly in the line of the chimney. But obviously the chimney's there. And then we have to get design temporary works that might support that, but they're in the way of the permanent works. So we had to do things literally a foot at a time with new steels that were getting welded, propped, connected to the steel. We had deflection monitoring software that would monitor any movements in the building at the same time, down to like 0.1 of a millimetre. So we were there basically doing it an hour by hour, monitoring of our activity, making sure that we weren't compromising the building before we finally got to a position where we could close that up and determine that we had successfully supported the weight of the chimneys upstairs.
These things can come about during the course of a project. Who generally covers the cost of those kind of extensive works and care and attention that has to go into it?
So essentially that it will either be appraised beforehand, i.e. we'll know the problem at hand and it will form part of the contract sum. Or secondly, as was the case with this, it was a variation to the contract, i.e. that work was instructed after the beginning of the contract. So we completed the strip out, then they were like, right, we've got some more time on our hands. We'd like these chimneys out to create a more open plan office for the final end user. Let's look at the cost of that. And then that's got various people looking at it from their engineers, our engineers, ourselves, and there's essentially a ballooning scope, but we have the ability to recover the cost of that in that setting. There would be certain circumstances where we take it on at risk, and the added complexity would just fall back on us, which is obviously something we want to avoid from a commercial perspective.
How long does a demolition take?
Without being crude, it's a size matters perspective. A single detached house might take 10 days or 2 weeks, whereas a large-scale demolition of a row of flats could be a year. Strip out the same, if you've got 1,000 or 1,500 square metres, we'd do that in maybe 2 weeks. If you were iterating that over several floors to make it 8,000 square metres, it's obviously going to be longer, but you'll have some recovery, maybe overlap, if you can work in several areas at a time. And it's very dependent on access as well. So size and access are the two biggest contributors to duration.
And of the kind of three we mentioned earlier, demolition, strip out and cut and carve, what's the long, like, it, again, is it the strip outs tend to be quicker or very completely different projects?
It would vary from project to project. If you took the same building, you'd probably strip it out slightly faster than you demolish it. And then cut and carve is a law unto itself, because you might have to do things in a certain sequence because of what you're doing to the building. If you were to do work on multiple work faces simultaneously, you might weaken the building too much.
A lot of organising involved.
Yeah.
And, could I demolish a house myself?
But I probably wouldn't advise you. On a serious note, that would be something that people would consider, because essentially, everyone can go to their local Travis Perkins and buy some hand tools and a sledgehammer and maybe some debris netting. But there are regulatory compliance issues to consider, and you'd have to get permission from the council. The council would probably want to see adequate risk assessment or method statement. You'd have to adequately consider the risks to yourself and more importantly, to your neighbours and the wider community, because there is a significant impact of demolition on people around dust, noise, etc.
So talk to us about some of these dangers of demolition, and also how you work with the Health and Safety Executive.
So, demolition probably incurs all risks that you can incur in construction, but that isn't to say that other elements of construction are without their risk. They are all with risk. So probably the key ones we encounter are working at height, so working on a scaffold or a mobile tower, dust, breaking things apart creates silica dust or plasterboard dust that operatives can inhale. There's noise, there's slips, trips and falls, so walking around a potentially disorganised site with lots of loose material on the floor, someone could fall, there could be, something sharp that they fall on. I've also got falling debris, for example. If you've got a building that's in the process of demolition, there's debris falling. Obviously, you need to protect that from ever coming into contact with a person. Live electrical power is a big risk. And lastly, although it's not a risk, but a key consideration, would be our environmental footprint. So how our operation impacts on the environment. And we talked about waste management earlier. That's a key thing that we look to mitigate. We don't really work with the HSE. They're there as a regulatory or auditing body that may or may not come to your site. But that doesn't mean that our jobs are appraised with any less thoroughness or consideration for the risks that we face. And although demolition, I think, has a bit of a bad rep or a dirty trade to certain people, I think it has some of the highest standards of health and safety as far as innovation go. Developing new tools or new methods that mitigate some of the risks I just discussed. There's not much of a demand on a painter to make his, or a decorator to make their work face less dangerous, but there's a demand on us to maybe work in the same environment as a painter and therefore make his work environment safer. And we have pretty much every trick in the book to make people's lives safe at work and make sure they go home safe to their families every day.
Great. Well, we'll move on to question number four, going into specifically strip out and what is strip out in construction?
So strip out, I think we mentioned earlier, it's just the complete gutting of a building. That would be what I call a full strip out. A partial strip out could be anything from just removing this desk and the wall behind me, or maybe some of the lights. So every job's going to have its own specification. A great spec is a full strip out, because it means there's more to bill, and it's also slightly easier to plan because you haven't got to work around retained elements, which can be, you know, quite a delicate exercise. But yeah, it's really bespoke as far as what the client's requirements are on that project. I think we've got some photos. I mean, this is part of a full strip out. I know you can see the carpet's still there. That was left down for the purposes of protecting the tenants below from too much noise. This is the same job. You can see there's nothing left at high level. All those columns and slabs are structural. And then finally, this is a partial strip out. We've removed the partitions and the floors, but you can see up high that there's a lot of retained services that we all have had to work around during our process.
And okay. Would you say that strip out is a little bit more complicated than full demolition? Whereas, because in demolition, you have an empty building that is just for you and your team to work with. Whereas with strip out, there can be an existing business or office is still there, and you have to work around it. You have to work around the timescales, the people that are there. Health and safety is obviously mm-hmm. important, we've mm-hmm. touched on as well. And also, you can't affect some of the services that are in play that people need to continue working.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, each field is going to have its outliers where you might have something very simple or another thing that's very complex. But you touch on the right points that we probably have to think about more things in strip out. Strip out's also highly more labour intensive. We might have 20 men on site, whereas if you're doing a full demolition, you might have two machine operatives and two labourers. So there's a lot more moving parts, a lot more potential people at risk, even if the activity itself is not riskier. The fact that you've iterated it or compounded it across so many people makes it probably a more intricate thing to consider and appraise, yeah.
And moving on to final question, question number 5, how does an interior strip out work? Where do you start? Where do you end? Yeah, as you mentioned, who's involved?
I think it's actually quite magical, because we, as the demolition specialist or strip out specialist, are responsible for undoing or deconstructing a building that might, when it was fit out, require the input of 50 trade specialists under one main contractor, and might have taken a year. And we're given maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks to remove it all. So it's the same amount of material that obviously has to go in or go out as came in. And it's got to be dismantled in many ways the same way as it was put in the first place. So we have to be, to some extent, a jack of all trades. As far as sort of sequencing goes, it's every job's logical. You remove all the internal partitions, then your ceilings, then your floors, and lastly, normally, the high-level services, because that enables the different materials to arise at different times. So you haven't got metal here, plasterboard here, rubbish here, and it, you know, it might be a bit of a mess if you don't do it carefully.
Has there ever been anything that you've not been able to get out? You know, how I've taken a sofa upstairs and then I honestly don't know how to get that out.
The biggest problems that you ever face are safes.
Oh, of course.
So we're at a job at the moment where we're in the bank vault.
God, that's
and there's
fun.
A safe door. The safes themselves are made out of bricks, so we can break them. But the safe door, I've never seen anything like it. It's probably weighs a ton, and it's in the basement, so we've got to get it up somehow.
To crane it out.
We'll see.
Did they get it in? What was that the first thing that went in? Or?
Probably. Wow. There would have been a hole, I think, in the centre of the building, and they would have dropped it in. And there would be specialists, obviously, putting it in. This touches on my point, just that everything's put in by someone who's specifically trained on that thing. Whereas we have to be very well trained, but at all things, you know, maybe not quite to the expertise as the tiler in tiles, but we have to be very competent across all different material types and features in a building.
And you mentioned earlier that you might kind of do a bit of the building. Do you get involved in the construction?
Yeah,
much?
I mean, we're kind of led by our clients in a lot of those instances. They might say to us, oh, It would really benefit us if we could get you to build the blockwork walls in the showers, or if you could do the infills, because it's going to work in tandem with your time on site. And we'll take a view on it. If it's a small percentage of the value of our work and it's not something we're specialist in, we'll probably do it. If it was going to be half of the value of the work, we'd probably be honest and say to the client, look, we're essentially going to have to employ a specialist. There'll be our profit and overheads on top. And we're just going to be a letterbox for you. So maybe it's worth reconsidering. But if it's a small element, we'll always throw our hat in the ring to help.
Yeah. So if you dig up the safe, pull it out halfway mm-hmm. through the floor, you might have to fill it back in.
Potentially, yeah. Although there is a hole being made in the floor anyway, so if we time it right, we'll get it right.
There you go. Cool. Well, there's just kind of a few more little questions about First Demolition Services and, you know, how many buildings or projects have you kind of worked on, completed since?
I counted about 3 or 4 months ago, and I think I got to 57.
Oh, wow. All 50, different.
57 projects, mostly different, yeah. I think there might be two or three where there's multiple projects in the same building. So there's a bit of familiarity there and rinse and repeat, etc. But yeah, I think 57 unique contracts that we've done.
And what kind of project would you say has been the smallest that you've done?
I think the smallest was probably a strip out of an apartment, like, you know, 10 grand or yeah. something like that. Yeah. They don't live long in the memory, unfortunately, the small ones.
Well, then the big ones?
The big ones live long in the memory, yeah. I mean, the hotel I mentioned earlier and the job above Holborn Station, they're all great. You know, Holborn, the hotel was into the millions. Others were into the, you know, mid six figures. So,
and
what's it like running a demolition company?
Unpredictable. honestly, you know, every day is different. Because we're accountable to all different people, all different clients. Our clients might have personnel changes often. So we get used to one person's way of working, and then all of a sudden he's replaced, or he leaves, or he or she, obviously, might get posted on another job, and we have to adjust to a new method, new understanding, et cetera, et cetera. So, and we have new operatives all the time as well, you know. So we have to be answerable to different people and command and direct and manage different people on an almost daily basis. So
that was going to be my next question. How many operatives or people do you kind of employ or have on site?
I mean, it's variable according to the how busy we are, but I think at a peak probably 50, wow. 55. And then obviously there would have been times we've not had anyone on site, although I can't remember the last time that was the case. But yeah, you know, anything from 5 to 50. And it's up and down all the time.
Cool. Wow. Super. Sounds interesting. I mean, how do you get into demolition? Where would I start?
Good question.
How did you get into demolition?
I got into it by accident, and then I made a fist of it eventually, hopefully. I mean, it's probably an interesting field for people who do want to pursue a career in construction. It's something that's modernising very quickly. So I think... I think that's interesting for the newer generation coming through. It's adopting lots of new techniques. I think, I mean, you could go to any agency and get work as a labourer, as long as you have your CSCS card in place. And you know, you could get exposure right in the belly of the beast, see how it works. And then, you know, if you're of a more professional mindset or more cognitive, want to pursue a cognitive field, contact a demolition company, contact us. We'd happily give you some training on estimation or management or safety. Yeah, and just take it from there. It's I don't think there's a single track into it, and I don't think anyone would give you the same answer as to how they found themselves doing it, unless it's a family business, of course.
Well, thank you very much for helping us answer all our questions today. That's been Tab U, Episode 5, Demolition. If you've got any other questions, leave them in the comments and we'll be sure to get back to you. Like, subscribe, and see you next time.
If you need any more information on First Demolition Services or you want to get in touch with us, please visit www.firstdemolitionservices.co.uk or email info@firstdemolition.co.uk or follow us on LinkedIn under First Demolition Services. Thank you.